related as the problem of not knowing states of the world. Why is this an important problem? Lack of knowledge makes it difficult for actors to predict the outcomes of their actions directed at the future. This is a concrete and very practical problem. All actions, one way or the other, deal with the future, no matter what type of activity in which one is involved. The problem of uncertainty is most clearly defined and discussed in economics, but it's central in all social sciences, I would argue. I will draw on economics, not the least to define the problem, and on sociology on how to address it. I claim that this offers new avenues of research. In the first lecture, I will present the problem and identify and discuss ways to reduce uncertainty. This lecture represents works connected to the book I'm currently writing. In lecture two, I will critically assess the so-called new economic sociology. And the main point in that lecture is that the problem of uncertainty not only is central, but it also offers a common starting point of economists and sociologists. And I will point out the role of uncertainty in relation to industries as a way of enable economic sociologists to focus on relevant economic problems, but also to communicate and perhaps even to collaborate with economists. Taken together, the two lectures give new insights, I hope, into the problem of uncertainty reduction and offers hopefully a productive way of discussing and collaborate between economists and sociologists. And in a way, it tries to, instead of continuing the heated debate, at least from the perspective of sociologists directed at economists, and not create further dividing lines. So I now turn to the first lecture, which is called Reducing Uncertainty. We are certainly uncertain about many things. The opposite of uncertainty is certainty. Following Descartes, we may argue that we're certain about our own existence and that we today exist in this lecture hall. I may be uncertain about many things, what time there is, for example, and how much money there is on my bank account, if Descartes has ever been to Sweden, to take a few examples. However, these questions can be addressed, and there is an answer to each of them. In this and in the following lecture, I depart from the problem of uncertainty associated with future-looking decisions. Or future-oriented decisions are, for example, to know whom to hire out of the 5 or 6 shortlisted candidates for the position as chief engineer at a company that develops front-lift tractors. Another example would be to how to decide which accounting bureau to use for the unit to be set up in Mexico. We are uncertain about the government will be formed in my home country, Sweden. You're all uncertain about the value of the lecture you currently attend. And to be quite honest, that's the situation for me as well, because I've never given this lecture before. The future is thus never certain, and this is true of all spheres of life. Uncertainty, hence, is a general problem which all actors face. I will zoom in on uncertainty in the economy. And uncertainty means that we cannot predict outcomes or consequences of our actions. The problem of uncertainty, in essence, is caused by lack of knowledge. The more knowledge we have about the world, the less is the uncertainty about the world. Uncertainty cannot be eliminated, but reduced. And uncertainty reduction only enables decision-making, thus with less uncertainty, not with certainty. The problems of uncertainty are always, in the very end, faced by individual actors, people and organizations who make decisions. Let me give one example of an individual strategy to reduce uncertainty. If you have, for example, 100,000 euros to invest, there are plenty of alternatives. You may, for example, buy stocks, buy a small property, buy some land, invest in prospecting for minerals. You may bet, invest in your education, or try to become a soccer player, or set up a business. For many of these alternatives, there's enough information and knowledge so that you can calculate expected profit. You can thus use the risk to calculate expected profit of the different stocks listed on the stock exchange, for example. In other cases, there is neither enough information nor knowledge available. For example, when it comes to prospecting mines, or the ambition to make a living out becoming a soccer player or an author. To gain knowledge, find strategies and to make decisions with predictable outcomes, which can lead to advantages, is often the aim of persons and organizations making decisions. By using information and gaining knowledge, it's possible for actors to reduce uncertainty. If an actor has unique knowledge based on drilling, for example, this actor has an advantage in terms of expected future outcomes if the person is to prospect for minerals. However, many of the ways that actors are using to reduce their uncertainty are available to very many, and thus not private. In many cases, uncertainty is reduced because of social processes, and with the result that can be used by many. This means that the uncertainty reduction is public. There are very many examples of this. For example, the existence of laws that safeguard property rights and rules that regulate prospecting as ways of to reduce uncertainty for those who consider to prospect. That there are markets in which prices for labor as well as minerals are publicly set also enables actors to make decisions about to start prospecting or not. These are examples of how actors make decisions about which firm to sign a prospecting mineral contract with based on publicly available knowledge. In this lecture, I focus on the public ways of reducing uncertainty in the economy. The aim of the lecture, in a nutshell, is to present an analysis that complements the focus on individual strategies for decision makers by an analysis of the public uncertainty reduction, results that can be used by many. To analyze public uncertainty reduction, I study public knowledge in terms of what I call states of the world and their correlations, the correlation between these states. I define states of the world as knowledge about facts, relations between things, and what will happen with these under certain circumstances. So the knowledge about facts, relation between things, and what will happen with these under certain circumstances. And this knowledge is grounded in either logics or empirically supported facts or evidence. Knowledge is there defined in a pragmatic way. Knowledge of states of the world means that when it's put in use, it leads to expected results. By analyzing uncertainty reduction in public, I claim that we can add new scientific knowledge on public uncertainty reduction and add this to the already existing literature on individual strategy of person and organizations. To generate this knowledge, I pose two research questions. The first question is, why is uncertainty reduced? The short answer, and I won't elaborate on this, is that actors do it to survive and to make better decisions. This is true of most cases, but as I will mention, not all. The second question is, how is uncertainty reduced? It is this second research question that is the focus of my lecture. This question, when we start the analysis, leads to the study of different ways of uncertainty reduction. The ways that will be discussed are institutions, both informal, or some call it grown, and formal or decided. In my current research, I also analyze uncertainty reduction using forms of decisions, convolutions, and contest. It's also possible to look at the consequences of uncertainty reduction for actors, and even to evaluate the different ways of uncertainty reduction. Finally, it is possible to study how the ways of uncertainty reduction emerge. Uncertainty. Uncertainty, in a broad sense, is a problem that haunts people, and some call it fear, uncertainty under a different name, as Bauman called it. Seen over several thousands of years, the uncertainty for the inhabitants of the world has changed. Clearly, most of us benefit from the accumulation of knowledge that make up the current stock of knowledge. While at the same time profiting from technological development, as well as the institution called insurance, both private and public, for example, in the form of welfare states. There is today a higher standard of living for most people than ever before. Issues of health, security, and food are for many no longer acute. We simply know more, and this increased knowledge makes life more certain and thus more predictable. Simultaneously, the global risk, along the lines of Ulrich Beck, which often is the sociological term for uncertainty that complex societies face, refer to, for example, nuclear weapons and global heating. This development has created new uncertainty at the systemic level that single actors cannot really reduce. What is most striking is the changing way that people over time are exposed to uncertainty. Much of this development is due to technology and standard setting made by possible, by our increased certainty of how to build things to further our own interest. But what more precise is uncertainty? The literature offers very many different usages of the notion, but I will draw on the works of Frank Knight, based on his book from 1921. Uncertainty, to give a definition, refers to a situation in which we do not have a complete description of the world which we fully believe to be true. This is a quote taken from Kenneth Arrow, a follower of Knight. As some of my sociological colleagues, most notably Jens Becker, but also Reza Saren, have argued, uncertainty is a central question and refers to a situation in which we cannot predict or foresee what will happen when acting or not acting, nor what others' action will lead to. Parsons is clear about the central role of uncertainty. It represents, and I quote, the contingency of unpredictable changes in the situation of action. And he says, uncertainty is even, and I quote, a built-in feature of living organisms. The older Knight was clear about the fact that we in reality are never informed about everything or have perfect knowledge. He discussed in part two of his book, Risk, Uncertainty, and Profit from 1921, the situation of a world with no uncertainty. This part of the book is called Perfect Competition and constitutes the bulk of it, in which notions of risk and profits in perfect markets are discussed. This was intended as a thought experiment to show what it would take to eliminate uncertainty. It is also, somewhat paradoxically perhaps, this part that was used to codify the thinking and teaching of the neoclassical model, which presumes that actors have perfect knowledge. In other words, had the economists read or tried to reread today, Knight, the more profound problem of uncertainty, rather than risk, would most likely have been higher on the agenda. Of the two types of public knowledge that reduce uncertainty, logics and empirical generated and supported evidence, it is the latter that is central. There is hence, I would say, little point here to discuss at length the logical states of the world, including, for example, simple facts like 2 + 2 = 4 or so. To perform such operations is a kind of knowledge that an actor has or doesn't. This knowledge is, in a sense, tautologically true in light of the premises. What I focus on is states of the world contingent on empirical evidence. Uncertainty can be directed at, in principle, past or future events. States of the world that have already occurred and for which uncertainty is about finding out how it was or what has happened is one such kind. Such situations are characterized by the lack of information about the states of the world. The states of the world, as it were, nonetheless already exist. This kind includes the answer to questions such as, what was the inflation rate in the year 2000 in France? Or why did the financial crash of 2008 occur? Obviously, you can debate these things, but in one sense, there are established ideas about what happened. These states of the world can be established using accepted means, such as scientific means, and are often considered as facts. Much knowledge about correlations, such as between religious denominations and suicide rates, represent empirically verified states of the world for a given past time. This type of knowledge, relatively speaking, is often unproblematic. And I will not focus on how we gain information about facts. The point is rather to study how states of the world come about. As mentioned, the scientific discussion to which I refer and the focus of Frank Knight is on uncertainty of action and outcomes that are future-oriented. States of the world and correlation of states of the world are established, and these established states of the world are often extrapolated into the future, and they often give us good reasons, or at least reasons, to make predictions about the future. However, nothing is inherently certain or non-contingent. Human activity makes uncertainty contingent. As soon as other human beings, individually or in organized forms, are involved, not only uncertainty about, for example, the rule, but about the compliance of the rule surface. The classical ego-alter interaction, in which ego tries to anticipate alter's behavior, who then, alter, then tries to interpret ego's behavior, create uncertainty. This is the so-called problem of double contingency, which has been discussed by Parsons and Luhmann and many others. And it's also, obviously, very central in game theory. Many states of the world are uncertain because they're more or less directly contingent on human activity. And this in two ways. Partly on what others will do, but also on our own reflexive capacity. Let us take an example. The future demand of skateboards is dependent on if people, and who exactly, will use skateboards and in what way they will be used. Demand will also depend on structural conditions, such as unemployment rates and even fashion. But human knowledge is also reflexive. Knowing and talking about skating, why people like it, writing about it, making advertisement for it, and so on and so forth, may lead to change in the use and ultimately demand of skateboards. If we put this more philosophically, uncertainty is certainly an inherent part of our life, and we are not outside of the world that can be described objectively. We are, to speak with Martin Heidegger, in the world, meaning that we in the world are co-constituted. And I think this is a central principle of uncertainty reduction and the problem of uncertainty. So what I've just outlined suggests that uncertainty, and often even indeterminacy, are conditions of social life. However, certainty has no intrinsic value. Moreover, uncertainty, for a variety of reasons, is far from always to be avoided by actors. There's a great interest of many to maintain uncertainties, but also to use and sometimes even to increase it. Some uncertainty represent, for example, also opportunities for profit in the economy. And Knight writes about that. And an entrepreneur, of course, as in the line of Schumpeter's writing, is also an example of how uncertainty is an opportunity. If we take the very large field of economy of sport and the associated industry of betting, this is contingent on uncertainty. Seen in this light, one may argue that not only because of uncertainty, do we see action. Individual reduction of uncertainty. So far, I've tried to discuss uncertainty at the general level. Now I turn to more explicit to the reduction of uncertainty. Already Frank Knight was clear about ways of reducing uncertainty. He says, and I quote, "In the first place, we can increase our knowledge of the future through scientific research and the accumulation and the study of the necessary data," and this I've discussed. And obviously, end of quote. "But one can also," he continues, and here I quote, "clubbing the uncertainties through large-scale organizations of various forms." He lists also other options of how uncertainty can be reduced. To, and here I quote, "increase control over the future," end of quote, and I quote, "slowing up the march of progress." So we can actually, if we don't do much and we try to reduce the progress that we're making, the life will be more certain, he says. But we can also try to increase our control of the future. These ways may be used to address uncertainty in the public so that many can benefit from the uncertainty reduction. But it can also be employed as individual strategies. Knight mentioned insurance as well as organization, which he sees as a way of shared uncertainty, and speculation, which he considered to be a distributed uncertainty, as additional means that individuals can use. Though he mentioned these, he does not really elaborate on them, and then the outlook is still that of the individual actor. I here acknowledge, but do not focus on the specific means and strategies available to individual decision makers and their actual decisions. Such issues are the concern of sociology of decision, psychology, social psychology, decision theory, as well as management of uncertainty. These are, of course, important issues, but also relatively well covered in the literature. Another important approach to address the issue of uncertainty is taken by Pierre-Michel Ménagier, who analyzed uncertainty management. That is how actors, in a sense, also can exploit uncertainty. He suggests an issue that deserves closer attention, namely the creation of uncertainty, though he also discusses the institution, particularly in the art world or the aesthetic sphere, that lead to reduced uncertainty. But individuals reduce their uncertainty by some means. Networks are probably the single most distinct means of uncertainty reduction for individuals. Nevertheless, networks are essentially built of ties or dyadic relations, the connection to which is not publicly available. If one part ends the relation, the tie between the two is broken, and the actors enacting the notes, and more generally, the actors enacting the notes control additional entrance to the network. Bronislaw Malinowski's study from the 1910s, written in 1922, the study of argonauts, illustrates how Trobriandrus used ties in the Kula ring to have safe havens on islands far from home, which can be used also for trade. For each person, Hukula, the uncertainty is reduced. Each of the ties that make up this entire network, however, is reciprocal and not public. For society, this, of course, may nonetheless lead to reduction of uncertainty at the general level. For example, if there are very many different ties that make up a dense network. Also, different rules of thumbs and private experience of knowledge are important for individuals to reduce uncertainty. Though obviously the strategies may not necessarily be objectively rational. To individually or by joining hands, organize the conditions of one's decision, as mentioned by Knight, is a typical example of uncertainty reduction. To set up meta-organization, as has been discussed by two colleagues of mine, Göran Arne and Nils Brunson, such as industrial association, can be a distinct way of making the world. Calculations, the use of algorithms, and different strategies are all means that individuals can use to reduce uncertainty. An actor can purchase information from a firm to gain knowledge about states of the world and various correlations that gives it a comparative advantage in the market. For example, gaining knowledge about potential customers, to better adjust advertisement and product development. Much of these activities falls under the heading of market research. Industrial espionage, bribes, and the creation of trust are additional, today often illegal, means that actors can use to reduce their uncertainty. However, the knowledge gained by these strategies is not public. Moreover, the reduction of uncertainty for a single actor must not imply reduced uncertainty for others. Let me now turn to the other side of the matter, namely the making what reduces uncertainty for individual actors, zooming in on what happens in the public. Reduction of uncertainty in public. In addition to Knight and other particular economists, I put the emphasis on public uncertainty reduction, which means that my approach adds a dimension to what I talked about thus far, namely about the strategy used by actors to reduce their own uncertainty. My analysis consists on the way by which uncertainty is reduced for many in public. Public uncertainty reduction leads to states of the world that many actors can use to reduce their uncertainty, making individual or collective decisions. The formal answer to how uncertainty reduction is accomplished is the establishment of states of the world. Actors can orient to or draw on states of the world, thereby reducing their uncertainty when making decisions. The ambition for the rest of the lecture is to analyze the making of these states of the world. My answer, to preface the analysis, I identify two different types of uncertainty reduction. The first is states of the world as general principles that have extension in time. This more specifically refers to institutions, both those institutions which are grown and those that are decided, and to standards for the evaluation of things, actions, or events. I will here leave out standard as a way of uncertainty reduction, not because they're less important, because of time limitation, But it's clear that standardization, standardized measurement, for example, which can be used to evaluate what I in broad sense called things, can reduce actors' uncertainty. Coordination using common scales as the metric system used to produce, for example, standardized screws facilitates the work for many actors and reduce their uncertainty, and also the uncertainty that otherwise would stem from double contingency in terms of production, for example. The second type is particular states of the world. It can be established scientific results, decisions about various things, and assessment or rankings. Prices in markets are also states of the world that actors can use to act with less uncertainty, for example, when deciding on how to invest. Principles, and I will elaborate on these, and particular states of the world can be combined, such as when we are guided by a law, which is a principle, to elect the vice chancellor of a university. The election itself is a particular state. Thus, establishing a particular state of the world based on rules. Both general principles and particular states of the world are results of social processes. And I already published a text, Forms of Uncertainty Reduction, in 2018 in Theory and Society, which discusses the forms of particular states of the world. And I will here concentrate on the principles. I now turn to institutions. Much of what we regard as certain in modern society is the result of institutions, and they can be seen as the profound building blocks of social life. Institutions are central both in sociology and economics, and can be seen as a bridge between the two disciplines. However, the economist Oliver Williamson said in year 2000, and here I quote, "The confession is that we're still very ignorant about institutions," end of quote. He pointed at the need for more research. Williamson, in this article from 2000, speaks of four levels of institutions, starting with the most deeply rooted. This level comprises what is called informal institution and customs, which is a topic of social theory, or we may say today, perhaps, sociology. Then he says, come institutional environment, referring to formal institution, which is the object of study of, for economics of property and positive political theory. The third level is governance, by which he means the proper political system for settling conflicts, including contractual conflicts, which is the task of transaction cost economics. The fourth level refers to resource allocation and employment, which means price setting and adjustment to production, which is the object of study of neoclassical economics. Institutionalized knowledge can be used to turn our personal or collective uncertainty into certainty, or at least less uncertainty. Institutions, both grown and decided, are by definition public, and so are other objective existing attempts to create rules, such as soft laws and standards. These states of the world are general principles that reduce uncertainty in public. Much of social life is about institutionalized knowledge, that is, more or less taken for granted knowledge, which regard to existing states of the world and correlate the predictability between such states. Grown institutions. A grown institution, to define the term, is a state of the world that is taken for granted by several actors and supported by sanctions. Grown institutions are the social bedrock that are due to our ancestors and our own doings. They are taken for granted, can be more or less institutionalized, change only slowly, and constitute the stock of knowledge that guide actions. When the use of institutions fail, for whatever reasons, sanction can and often follow. This has been analyzed in great detail by the phenomenologists Peter Berger and Thomas Luckmann. A consequence of institutionalization is that our expectations are likely to be true, as Luhmann says. And that our expectations are likely to become true means that our certainty increases. Simple institutions like various virtues, such as politeness, are of such a profound character for social, and thus also for all economic activity, that they're often not even considered. However, an analysis of uncertainty reduction must start from grown institutions, not the least since other ways of reducing uncertainty are based on grown institutions. Some, for example, new institutional economic scholars may even argue that the reduction of uncertainty explains institutions. Though it, of course, correct to say that institutions reduce uncertainty, only those institutions that are decided can potentially be said to have been made to reduce uncertainty. In other words, grown institutions, in contrast, are unintended consequences or have unintended outcomes. But how do really these grown institutions reduce uncertainty? What we call institutions are socially produced patterns that prescribe behavior. More generally, institutions make the behavior of unknown others who enact formal roles predictable. The roles of buyer and seller make actors' behavior more predictable in modern markets. Grown institution is a domain of classic sociology that Williamson identified, but he was unable to tie this level to economics theoretically. But ever since Durkheim, sociologists and anthropologists have argued that any contract is preceded by social trust, which is then obviously a grown institution. Even the economist and Nobel laureate Kenneth Arrow in 72 is clear about the centrality of virtues like trust, truth, and loyalty for exchange to take place. A clear example is that many formal contracts are embedded in gift giving. This was obviously the case of the trade that was part of the Kula ring that I mentioned before. Also in the contemporary economy, does the role of gift giving play a central role for establishing and maintaining relations? Asaf Dar has shown this in several studies. If we were to construct an empirical list of virtues, roles, and practices, and the most profound institution of language, of course, that reduced uncertainty in the economy and upon which our contemporary economy rests, it would be a very long list. Decided institutions. The key to understand decided institutions is the attempt to make decisions for others. We should also recall that the etymology of the word institution leads us back to Italy and the notions of law and formal decision making. More specifically, decided institutions establish general principles that reduce uncertainty for many. It is, in its clearest form, a formal institution, like a law, is only to be used in the court to determine concrete sanctions. But it is, so to speak, ideally clear enough to provide guidance for others to act in a correct way without having to go to the court. Decided institution, if I were to define the term, are decisions for others about explicit principles supported by sanctions backed by an organization with power. Or decision for others about explicit principles supported by sanctions backed by an organization with power. These principles can be behavior, for example, rules or laws that inform what to do and obviously what not to do, or what is right or what is wrong. These principles are explicit and made, so to speak, public so that people can follow them. And if they're not followed, the sanctions are imposed by the organization with power. The difference between decided institutions and grown institutions is largely the way they come about and how they're maintained. The consequences may be very similar. Grown institutions are the result of a process of mutual adjustment. Among actors, they result in order, and formal institutions are the result of decided order. And while both forms are maintained by sanctions, formal institutions are backed by an organization that has the power to implement these sanctions. We may think of the state, obviously, but this is you can have also illegal forms. Moreover, decided institutions, and here I quote Douglas North, who got the Nobel Prize for his work on institutions, among other things. He says, institutions may change overnight as a result of political judicial decision. Grown institutions, as mentioned, change only slowly. And no one is, so to speak, in control of the change of these grown institutions. Though there is a huge literature exactly arguing that all institutions are, so to speak, deliberately constructed. But this I think is highly problematic in light of a detailed analysis of institutional theory, or those have written on institutions. So the distinction between grown and decided institution is, I would say, very important, but not always made in the literature. Even the leading economic sociologist, Mark Dronovet, in his most recent book from 2017, for example, sees institutions as fundamental, but view them as essentially grown at the same time as the resource on which actors can draw. He doesn't make the distinction with types of institutions. I here follow Douglas North, who is very explicit about this distinction between what he calls formal institutions, which are created by decisions, or what I call decided institutions, and informal or grown institutions that grow out of mutual adjustment by actors over time. And moreover, the existence of decided institutions, I think it's clear from what I said, rests on the bed of these grown institutions. I think it's now clear from what I said that institutions can be seen as a way of making the social world. And especially formal institutions meet the requirements of Knight for how uncertainty can be reduced. Namely, to repeat what he said, to increase the control of the future. So the setting up a legal system is a way to increase the control of the future and thus reduce uncertainty. And I would like to stress here that the point what I'm trying to make is that with the uncertainty reduction, we address the problem that, so to speak, was mentioned but not by Frank Knight, but was not really addressed. Instead, we have had a huge literature on how individual strategies, and the business schools, of course, discuss individual strategies for how to make better decisions. So in a sense, what I say is not entirely new, but what I propose is that switching or turning the table make us see the problem of uncertainty in a different light. Okay, I finally would like to speak a bit about these forms of uncertainty reduction, because what I cover now are the principles of uncertainty reduction, stressing the role of institutions, leaving out the role of standards, which I just mentioned briefly. The forms of uncertainty reduction. If institutionalization have in many cases not taken place, and even more likely or unlikely to take place, we may have, which obviously means that uncertainty prevails. There are other means. To address uncertainty about future states, I have identified forms that produce states of the world. By moving from uncertainty reduction in relation to principles, which exist us over time, to uncertainty reduction by forms for establishment of a particular case, states of the world, we also make a temporal move. To look at the forms is to try to see how states of the world have been and will be established. States of the world are frequently produced, for example, in the form of scientific facts, or about the current inflation, or the interest rate of a central bank. In such cases, uncertainty, at least for the very time being, is reduced. In addition, issues about what is good and bad, beautiful and not, can at least temporarily be settled. Not at least the sociological literature offers plenty of examples from the aesthetic sphere about this, as shown by Pierre Michel Michaud and many others. This is, for example, accomplished in process of ordinalization, the process that results in the relative position on up versus down scale, as Marion Fourcade says, of whatever is at stake. The relative position of an up versus down scale. Uncertainty may be addressed by form, for example, when we're uncertain about states of the world related to what is good and bad. There are plenty of examples where there is a need for judgments directly or as part of a future-oriented decision. For example, to know what artist and song to use in a commercial, to know what a good action is, for example, in a moral or aesthetic sense, or when one is uncertain about the quality of books published, to determine this. It can also be about identifying which candidate to choose for an open position, to find out who's the best high jumper, to figure out who will win when my team take part in the football tournament. It's a huge area where we want to know things about the future. And of course, we will only know this when it has occurred. So I'm not giving you a medicine to see in the future, so to speak. But what I look at are the ways through which these states of the world are produced. So this type of uncertainty, which we currently face and obviously face every day, may exist, for example, about which journalist is the best or which academic is the most leading, the most, which article you should read and so on. Which baseball team is the better than all the rest, or which research proposal which will get a grant. It is to address these and many, many other issues, I have identified three, what I call forms of uncertainty reduction, that result in states of the world for particular cases. The first is forums that are organized for decision. So essentially, actors come together and make a decision about who will get the prize, for example. The second is called convolution, by which certainty emerge as a result of actors ascribing values resulting from mutual adjustment. So in this case, the state, for example, we have a debate, and gradually the state of the world appears as established as a result of many people saying, but no one is in control of this process. And I think much scientific result is of that nature. That is, we present result and only gradually people accept something to be true. No one decides that it's true or not. That was done many, many hundred years ago when Galileo, for example, revolted against the church. But today, I think this mutual adjustment idea of how states of the world come about is interesting. The third form I call contest, by which certainty, so to speak, is fought out using violence in war or in negotiation, where actors are in direct contact with one another. By using these forums, decisions of whom to let publish a novel, setting prices in markets for fish, which is the market is then a form of economic convaluation, where actors act individually, but the result is a state of the world of that is the price of a good, and so to speak, the value of what is traded in the market is settled for the time being. So every day, when the stock exchange closes, we have a state of the world, so to speak, being produced as a result of a market. And of course, this reduces uncertainty only in relation to not have it. And again, tomorrow there'll be a new market, a new state of the world will be produced. But once established, uncertainty is reduced about these issues and actors make decisions can use them as facts. Because prices in markets may last for only a short period, other facts may last for much longer, such as scientific facts. The forms resides on a bed of general institution, that is the above-mentioned principles of states of the world. And each of these forms, which are discussed in the text in Theory and Society, which I refer, has its own local, or you may even say better, partial culture priming, making the forms empirically different from one another. So, for example, the European Research Council is different from the French, which is different from the German Research Council, but each has the task of deciding who will get the money to do research. Though the forms themselves being social constructions, they are more institutionalized, the forms, than the outcomes or the results or the states of the world they produce. In other words, forms exist and have a supra-actorial existence, while the outputs may vary over time. Conclusion. I will now summarize the presentation briefly and make some concluding remarks. I have argued that uncertainty is an inherent part of life and cannot be eliminated. The sport industry, as well as competition, I don't know, I don't watch the French TV, but I'm sure you have also TV shows where there's like competition about the best, who bakes the best bread or whatever. and that type of competition, which really thrive on uncertainty. There's a great of interest about who will win this competition. But more generally, uncertainty reduction is at the most partial and not even partially permanent. Because, not the least, of the wish of capitalists to be ahead of competitors to make profit, uncertainty is central to economics. And my point that is indeed also great importance in sociology, and perhaps particularly to economic sociology. According to economics, uncertainty is a condition that can be turned into risk to facilitate calculation of the different decisions, alternatives, aiming at the given future end. But the narrowly defined economic problem of uncertainty is concerned with how individual actors can improve their decision by reducing uncertainty when making decisions. My lecture and my analysis has dealt with, as it were, the other side of the coin, namely the conditions of uncertainty reduction. More specifically, I've analyzed ways by which uncertainty is reduced in public. When states of the world exist, they enable actors to make reasonable predictions about outcomes of the decisions. And I've identified, to repeat, two types of states of the world: grown and decided institutions, as well as standards, all of which can be used in many different situations and under different conditions. I've called them principles, therefore. I've also identified forms leading to particular states of the world. And I have to admit that I'm not uncertain about Descartes in Sweden. As you may know, Descartes died in Sweden. This is a very unfortunate and particular state of the world, but also the only claim to fame for Swedish philosophy, that we killed Descartes. It's very... That's sad but true. In addition, I mentioned, but not here, analyzed forms of uncertainty reduction, that is, by the way by which states of the world are established. I mentioned decisions of particular states of the world, convolution, which through process of mutual adjustment, states of the world are established, and struggle between two or more parties, leading to states of the world. To conclude, public uncertainty reduction is clearly less researched than decisions and uncertainty reduction by individual actors. In the book I'm currently writing, this is the main theme. In addition to give the complete map of ways of reducing uncertainty and giving more empirical examples, issues of consequence of uncertainty reduction should be analyzed much more. In the next lecture on Friday, I will pursue my inquiry of uncertainty, but then turn it into much more a practical thing and also related to, obviously, to economic sociology. And I argue that it should be seen as central in economic sociology to further this field that intellectually has developed a lot, but perhaps has stagnated a bit. So I leave you with a question: what can concepts like uncertainty institutions do to bridge the gap between economics and sociology? And I thank you very much for attending this lecture. Thank you.